Oh, terrible cough there. Yeah, unfortunately Trev's got a cold, so I apologise to any listeners who don't like listening to people with colds.
Oh, I object. It's a very good cough. It's one of the best ones I've ever heard.
Great.
Right. Do you have some sort of scale for judging how good coughs are? You know, like a 1 to 10, with one like a... and 10's like...
and, exactly.
You know. I'd rather measure it on effects it has on the body. So, for instance, you know, if it makes you sore... if it gives you a sore throat, maybe a 3. Whereas if it makes you, you know, clench your ass, give it an 8, you know?
How do you measure this?
Okay. That's my rant. Sorry, I didn't mean to cause you to cough again. Shall we go into what I would call the big story of the week? Well,
yes,
which is faith healing and an expose on Newsnight. Now, you're quite keen on this, Reese. So, do you have some details that you would like to finish us with?
Okay, the it's like a new age faith healing sort of thing, where and I just might want to point out that I was waving my hands about there, you know, like in a new age style way when I was saying that. Pointless to add in, but you know, whatever.
Great radio.
It's a new age faith healing, where you it's a bit like Reiki, where you lay on the hands and that sort of thing, and you talk with the person, and they send positive thoughts to your brain, which then cures you of any disease. This featured on Newsnight last night, which was the 22nd of June, and there was a woman on there who claimed that she had cured some baby's cancer over the phone. It's a bit, you know, nonsensical. And, yeah, there's no scientific evidence to back it up. And Professor Ed Zardins, who's the professor of complementary and alternative medicine, he said they did a placebo-controlled trial, by which they mean they had they had actual faith healers, or people who said that they were faith healers, and then they had actors who pretended to be faith healers, and the actors actually did better than the real, in inverted commas, faith healers.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Now, I've got that's to not to say that they're actually able to faith heal.
No. What he said was it made people feel better, and the actors made people feel better than the faith healers did, whereas it can't actually cure any disease or anything along those lines. It just made them feel better.
The actors made them feel better. Better.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been doing that. I've been using theta waves to... deal with my diabetes, and I haven't used insulin for since last night, and as you can see, I'm completely fine.
I've actually started up an eBay store which is called Grow Your Penis Using Theta Waves, where people actually ask me to think about their penis, and then it'll grow. That's the idea.
Brilliant.
Can I get some brain bleach, please?
The worrying thing is how much time you think your missus might be desperately wishing for your penis to grow.
Thank you very much, Trevor. I will, after the podcast, I will ask her how much it bothers her.
Oh dear God.
Okay, so great. So this is basically like new woo. Well, it's not really new. It's been around for quite a while. I think it's like over 600.
It's not new.
No, it's over 600 theta healers, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Who are
something like that.
Touting for business.
Of course, that's another thing that's different about, well, sort of different about them. Whereas normal faith healers might ask for donations, or if your name is Peter Popoff, you'll demand thousands and thousands of pounds off them. Then theta healing is different in that you get charged up front as a normal, you know, CAM therapist would, as you'd expect. It's like £400 for a course of theta healing or something along those lines, to treat you or something. So.
Yeah, that's quite pricey, to be fair, considering all they're doing is just thinking about whatever problem you've got.
Basically, yeah.
So, but that's all that's different about it then. You know, it's no different from, say, Reiki, or, because that's how I'm thinking of it. It's just basically people not doing anything.
Yeah, well, exactly.
The British woman who was a practitioner that they secretly filmed, on her website, she's got a proud list of all of her qualifications, and one of them is that she is a Reiki master. Wow. She's not just a Reiki Padawan or whatever it is they call them. Proper master.
So, yeah, I think
you get called a Reiki master from the first stage, to be honest, of being a Reiki healer, so it's kind of a cheat, really.
Right. So it's kind of like, you know, those people that just start up their own business and then give their titles managing director.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, I'm now the CEO of my company. And, cool. Yeah.
So this was Jenny Johnston, or Johnston, or whatever you want to call her, and she claims that she can, she's cured a baby of cancer.
Yeah, she claimed that she was on the telephone to the baby, or the baby's mother, or something along those lines, and then the next day, the cancer had all disappeared. They don't know where it went, so it all disappeared, and clearly that means that the baby was cured of cancer.
Wow, that's really interesting. So, sorry, were you going to say something?
She's not nearly as crazy, though, as Vianna Stiebel, or Stiebel, the woman who's at the head of this Theta Healing Foundation deal. When she was talking in London, she was asked the question about, can people grow limbs back? And she said she helped a woman grow her ovary back. So, yeah, why not a leg? Brilliant.
That was excellent, I thought.
And I said this to Trev as well. One of the other things she was quoted as saying was, you know, people come to her, and one of them came to her and they were dying, and she was so didn't want them to die in her room that she just had to heal them there and then. Otherwise, you know, she's going to have a corpse just lying on the floor or on the couch or whatever. So, you know, good on her, you know. Maybe we should just, all the people that are dying, we should just ship over to her house. And then she can sort them all out for us.
Yes, if they don't die on her floor or chair or something.
Brilliant.
Good thought.
So,
I mean, of course, this is all assuming that there's evidence for it, which there isn't.
No.
There's a problem there.
And of course, there was one gentleman interviewed by Newsnight. He'd spent over £1,200 on this kind of therapy.
And he missed out on 2 years treatment because of it, didn't he?
Yeah, and he said he felt a bit of a dick for it as well. Well, sorry, those weren't his words, but, you know, he
paraphrased.
Yeah, paraphrasing him, he said he felt a bit of a dick for doing it.
He was angry and embarrassed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, bit of a dick then. So...
Yeah.
Yeah, so there is a lot of damage because the usual thing is people that say, well, you know, if it gives people hope, you know, maybe it's not such a bad thing. Well, being £1,200 down is a bad thing in my book.
Not just that, but it also, again, the main problem with all these CAM therapies and modalities is that they distract you from getting real medical treatments.
So would you not be so against them if they were only available if you were having conventional treatment?
Do you mean like having it as a complementary therapy?
Yeah, as just a complementary.
Yes, I'd still be against it because, you know, it's still pointless, pointless money. It's pointless money wasting, and why would anyone want to waste money? Yes, it might make them feel better as well, but at the same time, it's again with the homeopaths, you give them a penny, they'll take a pound, and give them a mince, they'll take a mile, all that sort of thing, because, you know, some homeopaths will claim, oh yes, well, we're only complementary, but no, it's a completely alternative medicine system, and other, you know, homeopaths will take that upon themselves.
Okay. Trev, anything else to add?
It's evil gouging of the weak. Even if the people practicing it believe in it, it doesn't matter. When people are mentally ill, we refer them for therapy. We don't say, great, go and wave your hands at some other poor people who are in desperate distress, and by the way, charge loads of money. It's a dreadful thing to do. The spokeswoman for the Terence Higgins Trust on that film called it bullshit. She just came right out and said, no, this is bullshit.
Yeah, I was so very... Chuffed. That was awesome when she said that. I was, you know, yes!
And the reporter who wanted to go back and get another interview with Jenny was standing by her street name in the middle of the report. Just in case anybody has any difficulty knowing exactly which Jenny Johnston this is.
That's awesome.
Fantastic.
Okay. Well, are we done on that? Because I got something really important.
All right. Okay.
Crikey.
As a friend, I've got a Catholic story this week.
Did you hear that?
Yes.
I'm a ventriloquist, see. I can have guests on, and I can make them say things without their lips moving.
Yeah, I mean, my lips weren't moving, I didn't to drink my Coke, so that was doubly ventriloquist, you know.
Oh, brilliant.
Some little ventriloquist trick of drinking something. Well, their dummy says something, so...
Doesn't that kind of make you the dummy, though?
Yeah, but I was also the ventriloquist, because I was saying it while I was drinking.
Okay. Very good. So, anyway, Trev.
Okay. This is one story, but there's kind of two points to it.
Okay.
London priest returned prestigious medal after admitting he abused boys. A popular Catholic priest returned a prestigious award to Queen Elizabeth after he admitted sexually abusing boys at a school in Africa more than 40 years ago. Father Kit Cunningham sent back his Member of the British Empire medal to Buckingham Palace in July 2010. He received the award during a ceremony in 1998, dressed in top hat and tails for his work with homeless people. The priest, who died December 12th last year, offered no explanation to the palace for returning the medal and asked only that there would be no publicity. But the reason for his action was disclosed on June the 21st this year in a BBC documentary, Abused Breaking the Silence. The film revealed Father Cunningham to be one of four Rosminian priests accused of abusing boys of British families who were attending St. Michael's School in Soni, Tanzania in the 1960s. The film was made when, after decades of living as far afield as South Africa, Australia, England, the United States, and Canada, former students now in their 50s and 60s contacted one another over the internet and exchanged stories about the abuse they suffered. What does it say at the end? Cunningham later confessed to the abuse in a letter to John Poppleton, a victim, and apologized for his actions. He said the abuse had been on his conscience for some 40 years, adding, "What can I do other than express my remorse and beg you to forgive me?" You'd think, not ask for there to be no publicity when he hands back his MBE. Mm. But the worrying thing is, this story appeared... it was either today or yesterday. Mm. And yet, it was returned in July 2010.
Mm. So, this nearly a year on?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Mm. So the only reason it came out was because of this documentary, not because of it actually being returned.
I'm not saying... Well, yeah, obviously I'm saying that. It's the case, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah. Mm, very interesting. So
that's strange that he'd get his request granted that he wouldn't have publicity.
I know. That's very worrying when a Catholic priest hands back an award and says, "I'd rather nobody said anything about this, okay? Right?" Surely that would set some alarm bells ringing.
Yeah.
But what can they do? Because if he hasn't confessed to them the reason why he's handing it back, he's just giving it back, then they can't speculate, can they?
No, but they could investigate, and they would find the internet boards that the boys that they abused were communicating on.
Hmm. So you're saying the palace referred it to the police or something?
I'm not saying that the palace are complicit in it, but it's kind of indicative of the privilege afforded to people and expected by the palace.
Mm.
Okay. It just allows me to hate all sorts of things that I genuinely hate in one story. All the hypocrisy and the bigotry. And then this, let's do a story about it now.
1 year later, now that we're kind of forced to,
and our back's against the wall.
Yeah.
Done. Dreadful. Sorry it couldn't be a funnier story like last week when the patron saint of lost things got lost.
Yeah, no, that was a much better story, to be fair. But, you know, I know it's hard, you know, having to find a Catholic story every week because, you know, they just don't do anything these days, do they?
That's right.
Well, they don't do anything funny. It's usually about child abuse or that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and this is one that the story of the abuse is the shocking thing that's coming out in the media at the moment. And this, the story coming out on the Catholic News Service itself seems to be indicative of the current trend that everybody's got of when it's pointed out to you that you've done something wrong, you agree and say, oh, yeah, yeah, totally. I knew that. I was about to say that to you. Yeah.
Yeah.
David Cameron. For example.
are you ready to play Guess the Year?
Yes. Okay.
I'm never ready to play Guess the Year, as you well know, but what the hell?
Now, unfortunately, because we have Reese on, that means you're not going to automatically win a point against
Stephen.
That's
Steven. True. I'm gutted.
So you should be really angry with him. Or you
could
don't be angry
with me.
Or you could just win. So, here's the rules for those who don't know. I'll read out some clues for a year from the past. The two guest hosts get to guess the year. If they get it right, they win a pint. If they get it wrong, they're locked out of the next clue. Are we ready?
Okay.
Oh, can I just point out that Reese and I are on equal footing with one legitimate win each?
This is true. So
but you've been on it a lot more than me. So in terms of podcast appearances to Guess the Year wins, I'm in lead.
Yeah, Reese's success rate is greater than yours.
Yes,
in fact,
exactly.
His success rate is 100%.
I'm suffering quite
exactly.
badly.
Right.
It might go down to 50% today, though.
Don't be so sure, because Trevor's rubbish.
It could be. I could slash it really dreadfully. Whereas for me, it's just going to be a slight steepening of the curve.
Okay.
I'll barely feel it.
Now, the only thing I'm going to say is, when we had you on last time, Reese, I did make it a little bit easier because I used a recent year.
Yes.
I think it was like 1985 or something like that. This one is not so recent. So,
okay.
But as I said, Trevor's the worst at this, so you've got a chance.
Okay.
So, here we go. February the 1st, Werner Heisenberg dies, the physicist, born 1901. In January, the Cray 1, the first commercially developed supercomputer, is released by Seymour Cray's Cray Research.
I should know that.
April the 16th, as a measure to curb population growth, the minimum age for marriages in India is raised to 21 years for men and 18 years for women. June the 29th, Seychelles gains independence from the United Kingdom. Oh, this is a tricky one. This
week. No idea.
No idea.
July 20th. Well, they do get easier. July 20th, Viking program. The Viking 1 lander successfully lands on Mars. October 4th, the brand new Intercity 125 high speed train is introduced into the UK.
Train. Right. 1981.
No.
Got it.
This one may be useful to some of you. In this year, the term memetics is first proposed by Richard Dawkins in his book, The Selfish Gene.
1983?
Nope, sorry. January the 21st, Concorde begins commercial flights.
Trev, 1979?
Nope, sorry. You're getting closer, though. April the 1st, Apple Computer Company is formed by Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak.
Oh, I should know this. Is it 1978?
Nope, sorry.
Arr!
April the 5th, James Callaghan becomes Prime Minister of the United Kingdom.
Trev, 1976?
Correct!
No!
My God! That's two. I've just doubled my legitimate wins.
And I've just cut my rate in half.
There you are, you got some applause. Oh. Some of those.
Excellent. I am now twice as good at this.
Yeah, and I'm only half as good at this.
And as Ashley Price.
And Reece,
although he still has 100%.
This is
no,
you.
Oh, the weakest link. Bye. Fine. I'll sign out and mumble now.
There you go. Well, I'm glad you got that where you got it, because we only had one clue left, which was the Eurovision Song Contest won by Brotherhood of Man. But, yeah, so that was probably a bit tricky for Reese. I apologise.
I should have learned the Apple stuff. I should have known that.
Yeah. So, I mean, you fail as an Apple fan. You know that, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Great. So, does anybody else want to have anything to talk about?
Oh, yeah, I'd love to...
Oh, hang on.
You go ahead first, Trev.
I won, so I'm gonna use that. Let me do my story first.
Okay, that's good. Cool.
You okay with that? Great. Right, celibate gay clergy can become bishops.
Oh, you get this is my other story.
Oh, man. So sorry. But yeah, gay clergymen can be ordained as Church of England bishops, it emerged on Sunday. Sex outside marriage is forbidden, but there is no rule to exclude celibate candidates in a civil partnership, the guidance paper said. So, it seems like gay married men can have equal rights with straight men as long as they exactly follow the traditions of marriage and stop having sex altogether.
That doesn't quite work out, really, does it? This is quite interesting, but surely they could get him on a technicality because, you know, it's not sex if you're gay, it's sodomy.
Right, yeah. Do you really think that's going to wash?
No, probably not. Wash out the Santorum, is it?
I'm glad that word is now part of your lexicon.
Are we going to put it on the shit Excellent. List?
No, it's brilliant. Okay. Even though it's technically... Yeah, I know what you're doing there.
Yeah. Okay. No.
No, it's wonderful. We should encourage its use.
So, what are you thinking about this? I mean, this is a step forward, obviously. So, unfortunately, we always have to kind of praise steps forward. But if you ask me, this is just taking the mick, really.
I think it is by some married bishop who looked over the living room to the desiccated husk of a woman he's married to that he hasn't had sex with for 10 years and thought, you know, what's the harm? We don't do anything. And by the time somebody's going to become a bishop, the chances are their marriage will be old and stale and dead. So, why not have equality? But it's like coming out and saying it. It's kind of creepy.
Yeah. Have you got anything to add, Reese? Or do you just not care about the church?
No, I mean, it's good that it's a step forward, but, you know, it's not really that much of a step forward, to be honest.
But this is, you know, this is the Church of England, so, you know, they're allowed to get married, and, straight priests are allowed to get married. And have sex. So it's this celibate thing is an unnecessary restriction, surely.
Yeah. Well, that's why it's not much of a step forward.
No. And it's a bit weird. You know, saying that you're gay but you don't have sex is, you know, it's like saying that you're heterosexual and you don't have sex. What is the meaning of the term, if you know what I mean? Because sexuality is obviously reflecting your practices. Or am I just talking out my ass?
No, I do actually believe that if you haven't had sex with anyone, you're not really gay or straight, because I'm pretty sure that you are defined by your practice.
Yeah, so the idea of that you can have gay priests are welcome as long as they're celibate, you know, you're not really admitting anybody, are you? You're just saying, you know, it's the don't ask, don't tell, really. You know, just pretend that you're not having sex, because no one actually believes that they're not going to be having sex. You know, or am I just too pragmatic for the church?
I don't think you could ever be, you know, a rule maker, because you'd break them all.
Yeah, that's what's going to stop you. being a member of the Church of England, your pragmatism.
Okay, fair enough. I was a member once, you know, so, you know, as in, sorry, congregation member, but okay, fair enough. Was there anything else you wanted to add to that, Trev? Or is it just basically a bit of a non-story, really? Apart from the fact that it just highlights the fact that they're just still discriminating against gays and women.
Yeah, just it's showing that it's not just the Catholics that I have a go at. Well, I don't like to have a go at Catholics at all, the Catholic Church. But the Church of England is often just as stupid and backwards and strange.
Yeah, I mean, don't even mention the word Uganda, because that's another another example of what is morally reprehensible behaviour going on at the top of the church. You know, people just not willing to condemn disgusting behaviour because they're worried it might cause a schism in their church. But we've done that one to death. Well, me and Steve have. So. Okay.
I do. So, Reese, you had a story. I'm hoping it wasn't the story that I just did.
No, it wasn't that story. Basically, I went to the Pythagoras lectures on, I think it was last Saturday, if I remember correctly. But yeah, I went and I did my Bleachgate talk to them, and that's hopefully going to be on the radio sometime in July. But then there was another interesting talk there. And it was by someone who did an open university course in inflammation, and he's now got a hypothesis about inflammation, and he's got a friend who had ME, and he's now supposedly cured of his ME, and they give a strange talk about antibiotics, the honeybee, and damaging the environment and all sorts of things. Their main point was that antibiotics are dangerous and cause autism.
Oh, Jesus!
Really?
Yeah. I'll go over their theory basically. So you might have heard of the candidiasis, the yeast, which can, you know, affect people's guts and things like that. And it's one of these diseases that's picked up on by quite a lot of quacks and nonsense spewers. It's, you know, a lot of people say, oh yes, you've got yeast, if they've got any sort of symptom, and that their little treatment can cure them of their yeasty problems. And yeah, so this talk, it was basically saying that they went over their theory that antibiotics cause all your gut bacteria or gut flora to die off, and then it gets replaced with yeast, and then the yeast toxins are immunosuppressive, so then you get infections, and then you can either get ME, autoimmune diseases, or in its worst form, according to them, autism. So when I was listening to this, it was very, very strange talk, because then they said, and of course antibiotics get into the environment either by us or by where they give antibiotics to cows to make sure that they don't get infected, because they give them regularly to cows, like on a routine basis, to stop them from getting any sort of infection or bacterial infection. And then their poo contains the antibiotics, or their wee or whatever, you know, however it gets excreted. And then this then gets spread over fields, which then attacks the immune system of bees, and that's why the honeybee is disappearing as well. And that's their theory.
Okay, but is this theory actually backed up with any evidence?
Sorry,
that
hypothesis. I keep saying theory. I mean hypothesis. They don't actually have any evidence. And one of the people, Gary Smith, who he did a paper, but it's more of a literary review, and then his hypothesis at the end, and it's, I think none of it was peer-reviewed or anything like that. So it's a hypothesis at that. But yeah, and that was just on inflammation in cancer. And then now he's set up a company where he's promoting some sort of inhibitor as basically cure-all now. saying that it's like this. Oh, I can't remember whether it's a vasoconstrictor or vasodilator, something along those lines. But yeah, that's basically it. And so therefore, we should stop using antibiotics.
That sounds like an amazing tapestry where every thread is a different bullshit.
That's probably a good way of saying it, yes.
Like, they sat there and thought, okay, this is a great hypothesis. You know that honeybees are dying out? Brilliant, let's have that as well. Great.
Yeah, and they said that they went to speak to DEFRA about it, and DEFRA were like, well, no, it's more to do with this mite that's affecting the bees, that's killing the honeybees off. I think one of them's Paul Jape and the other is Gary Smith, and they were like, no, it's definitely our hypothesis, even though we've got nothing to support this hypothesis, it's definitely our hypothesis. And actually, there was I think it was Paul Jape, he's the ME patient, and he was there giving the talk as well, and he said, now, doctors will tell you that they don't know what causes ME, but I can tell you now, it's an infection. Trust me, it's an infection. I don't have anything to back... I mean, he was basically saying that I don't have anything to back this up, but trust me, it's an infection. So, brilliant. That was... But the worst thing for me is that this is a... this is going out on a science podcast, and there's no science evidence to back this up, which, you know, sort of makes me feel bad for Rhys Phillips, because I need to talk with him about this, actually. But, yeah, there's... nothing to back it up, and it's a load of nonsense, really, because there's nothing to back up the theory, and it's just a load of nonsense. And I was speaking to them later in Starbucks, because we went to get coffee afterwards, and they mentioned vaccinations and how vaccinations can be bad, and I was like, wait. Vaccinations, there is no evidence to support the theory, the hypothesis that they cause autism. Andrew Wakefield came up with one paper in the 90s, and that was discredited very quickly because it was only 12 patients, and it was actually fraudulent data that he used because he changed the actual data from the hospital records. So that was a completely faked paper. And they were like, oh, no, it's not just Wakefield. It's this one Japan study as well that showed how autism rates after they removed thimerosal, which proves that vaccines are dangerous. Wait, what? And this source... was from Merkula.com, and for all the listeners who don't know, Merkula is an osteopath who knows nothing about medicine, he knows barely anything about clinical trials. He spews nonsense and sells nonsense as well. So he also promotes the idea that vaccines are bad.
As evidenced by the use of the word osteopath in his title.
Yes, exactly. Basically. Hmm. They're basically chiropractors for the rest of the body.
Wow, I mean, that's quite unbelievable, you know, for a science podcast as well. I would just like to say right now, we wouldn't have any of that bullshit on here.
Yeah, okay.
But, I don't care how much they paid me.
I don't know whether Rhys Phillips knew that what this talk was going to be about, because, Gary Smith, he went on Pythagoras' Trousers to do a talk last year about it, but he didn't do anything of the yeast causes all diseases, which, you know, is caused by immunosuppression. And then they were saying, the immune system is separate from the inflammatory system, which isn't true. That's not true at all. The inflammatory system is part of the immune system, as evidenced by the fact that when you get infected, your inflammation can sometimes flare up.
An allergy is a misfiring of your immune system, isn't it?
Yeah,
or something,
exactly.
And you often get inflammation with it.
Yeah, exactly. But no, they're different things, and they're actually caused by infections. And he said allergies aren't real at all, that they're actually just infections. But the thing is, then they were then saying something like, the pathogens themselves cause the inflammation. And I said, well, that's not true, because how come when you take an immunosuppressant, then surely you'd expect the inflammation to get worse, whereas if you have an inflammatory condition, like Crohn's, like I've got, and you take an immunosuppressant, the inflammation doesn't get worse, in fact, it goes down. And they didn't really come up with any sort of good answer for that, because, you know, I mean, if they're saying that it's the actual bad, the pathogen causing the inflammation, you'd have thought that suppressing your immune system would allow these pathogens to attack more and therefore cause more inflammation, if going by their theory. But no, that's nonsense, because when you take immunosuppressants, the inflammation goes down.
I'd like to say something, if you don't mind, about how skeptics tend to deal with things like this. It might sound like we're just giving some new idea a kicking before it's had a chance, but it sounds like what might have taken in Reese the first time is that if they first come up with a hypothesis and they say, this might be the case, we're going to look into it, there's no reason to dismiss that yet.
Nope.
Because you look into it, and if you find evidence, then great. We'll look into it mm-hmm. further. Other people will test your evidence. But and perhaps on the first interview, that was the stage they were at, in which case that's fine. Mm-hmm. Say what you like.
Yep.
But this time when they're saying, avoid certain things and now there's a cure-all, well, that's where you enter snake oil territory.
Yeah, but by the second... Sorry, by the first interview, I don't think they'd even got anywhere near any evidence, but that's fine. But they're at exactly the same stage now. They've not even started any clinical trials or any sort of studying of this. And the original paper was on inflammation. It wasn't anything to do with the yeast theory or antibiotics. It was just inflammation can be suppressed by this vasoconstrictor or dilator, something along those lines. And now he's started up a biotech company where he's... this is Gary Smith now. He's now spreading that this one particular type of drug can help treat all diseases, including cancer, along with vaccines. And basically he was trying to claim that this one thing is a cure-all.
So we're witnessing possibly the birth of another MMS?
Yes, except this was a pharmaceutical-based MMS.
Good grief.
But to go from, we found this thing that can suppress immune responses, which, there might be some evidence for, to run with it to that extent.
It wasn't even something that could suppress immune system. It was just that something that suppress inflammation, because he thinks that the inflammation and the immune system are separate. So it could just suppress inflammation. It's just mad, and I don't get how they jump. But then the one thing that I noticed is that they've just gone so far down this road of believing their own hypothesis that they're not open to other ideas. They're not open to other ideas, and they're rather than looking for evidence on both sides, they're just looking for evidence to support their claims as opposed to evidence that goes against their claims as well.
Yeah.
But then on their website, they claim that depression and other mental illnesses is a infection as well, and it can be transmitted to people.
What?
Yeah, I know, right? And so far, we think that depression is like a mixture of environmental causes and possibly not enough serotonin in the body or not enough norepinephrine. There's a number of possibilities that cause depression, but I don't think an infection is one of them.
Hang on, I think I can see how there might be a link there.
Mm.
If your partner gets a yeast infection and denies you sex, that'll make you depressed.
That's true.
It's all weaving together now.
I can see the shape of it.
But is that just anecdotal evidence from you, Trev, or have you got some clinical data to back that up?
I don't think he'd admit it either way.
You're cracking up there. I didn't hear that.
Of course, the clinical data came from getting the yeast infection cleared up. It was the visit to the clinic.
I'm backing out of the conversation so fast there's a beeping noise.
Yeah. I think next week I'm going to have a new sound effect, which is like a tumbleweed blowing through. Obviously, I'm going to have to hotkey it up for myself, because it's obviously going to be used quite a bit. Okay, I'm going to take this opportunity to promote something. And that is Scientology. I think it's great. No, I'm joking. It's bullshit. But I want to promote Chaos Theory, a night of science comedy, coming to Cardiff Skeptics in the Pub on the...
Yes.
Yes.
Great.
On the 18th of July, starting at 7:30. This is part of the Cardiff Comedy Festival. And if you want to see some intelligent comedy, not just vats and wooden ladders and planks of wood and stuff, then you should definitely come to this one. Believe it or not, both Trevor and I have volunteered to try and do something which is humorous. Are you looking forward to it, Trev?
Well, I'm tempted to say what's the worst that could happen, but you will answer me. So yeah. I'm not going to ask that question. We'll be fine.
Okay. But come along, it's going to be in the Promised Land. We're probably going to plug this every week between now and then, to be honest. So, but check it out. You can find it on Facebook. Just search for Chaos Theory, and it'll be in the lists there somewhere. Right. Shall we... Can I talk about something for a second?
Yep, okay.
I came across something on this website called The Mail Online. I don't know if you've ever come across it.
Yeah, it's full of nonsense.
Really?
And the headline, this is the personal blog of some guy, hang on, I'll find it in a minute. But the title of the piece was, "This Man in Black is Leading Us to a Very Dark Place." Now, who could this man in black be, you know, this...
David Cameron?
I think Peter Hitchens may actually say that, but no, it's not him. And this is Peter Hitchens' blog, by the way. So this is our friend Terry Pratchett, who, apparently, because he has a penchant for black hats and a sweater, he is the devil incarnate. He is Beelzebub himself.
Of course, it makes sense. You know, if you wear black, that means that you must be the devil.
Yeah.
Especially if you've got, you know, what might be thought of as progressive thoughts about. You know, ending your life.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I'm the devil. I'm wearing black right now. Oh my God. No, of course I'm not.
No, because you're not wearing all black, are you?
Well, either way, we wouldn't be able to tell because this is a podcast. Oh!
It's your turn to be naked this week. Woohoo!
Does that mean it's my turn next week? Because I wasn't last week.
Whoa, hang on a second. Hang on. No.
I'm Let's sure that could be against the law.
I think it is. I think any pornography, you must be 18. So please don't promise people that.
Don't tell us what you're wearing, Ray. Seriously. Don't take us off iTunes.
Can we get onto the serious subject of...
Peter Hitchens.
Of hating, yeah. I mean, this is a full-time job for someone.
Possibly.
Or pitying him, but to quote him, any human being by contrast, this is obviously in the middle of something, is immensely, uniquely valuable. We cannot kill our fellow creatures, alright, you with me, except under very special circumstances of self-defense or deterrent justice. So...
what, he supports the death penalty as well?
Yeah. So,
and not only that, it's a deterrent. Brilliant.
So he might actually justify killing someone as long as it puts other people off the crime. Sod whether they're guilty or not, let's just put people off crime by killing people.
It's like, well, we think this man might have been guilty of stealing something, so we're just going to, you know, kill him. Doesn't matter whether he actually did it or not.
And he was on the Big Questions only last week, I think it was the final of the Big Questions for whatever season it runs to, saying that prisons aren't harsh enough and we need to be locking up more people for longer and maybe beat them a bit. I mean, he didn't say that, but he'd probably go for it.
Everything apart from that bit. Yeah.
Well, he supports, you know, deterrent killing, so why not deterrent violence as well?
Yeah, so but I just thought it was... Go on, go Trev.
I read the entire piece, and it's broken up into little tiny paragraphs, just a few sentences in each. And there isn't a paragraph that goes by without one massive fallacy or a moment of idiocy or an appeal to emotion.
Oh, come on, this is Peter Hitchens that we're talking about. That should be expected.
But I just feel kind of sorry for the guy, because his older brother is just the pinnacle of debate. Even if you don't agree with him on everything, you're not going to catch him out in some stupid...
thought that he might take lessons from him or something.
Maybe. My favourite was, "Or we kill perfect babies because their birth might disrupt our comfy lives, and we tell ourselves that it is all right because our victims aren't fully human, though in our hearts we know they are."
that's like the kind of crap that people say. They say, oh, you're just an atheist because you want to sin. You know, really, you know there's a God, but, you know, you're just being like this just because you're an ass. I'm like, oh.
Why are you angry at God?
You busted me. You know. So. But I just had to bring this up because I knew that it would get Trevor angry, and it'll mean he won't speak as much tonight.
Thank you.
And there you are with your horrible mind.
Yeah, I mean.
Oh, no, that's right. I'm passing out a lot with the cold, so he might be doing me a favour. It's good.
Yeah.
He even says, because he's writing for the Daily Mail, at one point he says, Sir Terence Pratchett, as he presented his pro-death programme at the licence payer's expense last week.
I can't believe he got those words in. I mean, it was just...
That's just great. Oh, and listen to this bit. I predict that if assisted suicide is made available here, it will gradually become commonplace, just as abortion did. And it will not necessarily stay voluntary. Whoa there, Sparky! What happened to the abortion metaphor then? He was pointing out that abortion is apparently on demand, and this will happen with physician-assisted suicide, even though proponents want safeguards as much as anyone. Where are the forced abortions apparently going on?
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, as soon as the analogy with abortion comes up, and it's been used a couple of times, it's been used on our blog by people defending, you know, the position of, you know, pro-life.
I wouldn't call it pro-life, I call it anti-choice. I hate the pro-life
Well, I'm using it in both the context of against assisted suicide. Yeah, no, I agree with you, but, you know, against assisted dying and, you know, that position of both of them, they want to call themselves pro-life, which, considering that he's for the death penalty, I find that highly entertaining, really. So, he's pro-life unless they're murder, you know, unless they're murderers or, I don't know, homosexual or something.
well, and he bangs on about the Netherlands. There have been lots of studies, lots of oversight at the two states in America and the couple of countries in Europe that allow assisted suicide. None of them have come up with abuse, even though lots of the nurses involved and doctors involved have offered up anecdotal evidence and said, please, could you investigate this? The investigations have shown that the system is currently still working perfectly well. But he brings up a quote from a US professor saying that Dutch courts have held that just as a relief of suffering can justify the termination of patients who request euthanasia, it can equally justify the termination of those who cannot. Yeah, but does it, though?
No, it's like all the, you know, basically whenever you restrict something from happening, people will do it anyway if they want to. You know, it's again like with the drugs policy, which is complete nonsense. By banning the drugs, they're giving something to crime or criminals to supply instead, where instead they could just regulate and control the drug supply and get tax money from it. Ensuring that people would get more cleaner drugs. But the thing is, if people want drugs, they will get drugs anyway, whether the government says it's okay or not. And one of the things that anti-science-based drug legislation, those people say, oh, well, if you legalise drugs, it'll make it more acceptable to take drugs or, cause more people to have drugs. But the evidence says, well, actually, no, if people want drugs, they'll have drugs anyway, and drug taking doesn't go up. It doesn't change if you legalise drugs. So it's that sort of thing, again, if you legalise assisted suicide, well, then assisted suicide rates will go up. But no, if people wanted to commit suicide, then they'll either go to Dignitas or they'll commit suicide in their own home. Before they're, and that's another one of the harms from restricting assisted suicide, is that the people who don't have the money to go to Dignitas, they'll commit suicide at home before they feel that they're ready to, in case their condition deteriorates. And that wasn't there the case of the woman who went to court to find out if her husband would be prosecuted if he took her to Dignitas? And she was saying, well, I don't want to end my life now, but if my husband's going to get, if he's going to get punished when he does take me to Dignitas, when my condition deteriorates, I will commit suicide now. and while I still can, while I'm still physically able to. And that's one of the major harms from restricting assisted suicide, I think.
That's yeah. Debbie Purdy, I think.
Yeah.
Hero,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well said. So,
thank you.
But I just thought, you know, from Hitchens' point of view, how you can get from if we allow people having a choice to die, to go from that and say that we're going to just start emptying old people's homes and euthanizing them, there's no connection there at all. It's just scaremongering, and only an absolute muppet would actually fall for it, but apparently there's quite a few of them.
I started off going through that piece trying to identify each and every fallacy, but it became so tiring that I ended up just going down to the bottom of the document and writing 72 point tool over and over, because I just got so cross at the man. Not because he disagrees with me, but because he showed such little respect for his audience.
Mm. And I think over time that, you know, maybe any points that he, valid points he may have had about anything in this world, he's kind of just discarded them, and he's just purely using, you know, rhetorical devices to, you know, get across very unpopular views. Well, what I thought were unpopular views, but it seems that the readers of the Daily Mail lap them up.
That's the problem.
There is one more story that I wanted to bring up tonight, and it's on a similar kind of a theme, because with assisted dying, it's very easy to be against it, because it's a person dying. So to just have a knee-jerk reaction and say, oh, that sounds terrible, I don't want to be any part of that. Well, Animal Aid have recently said that people shouldn't donate to three or four different charities, because they fund animal testing.
Yeah. Funding animal testing.
Yeah.
What happened next?
Let's see. Cancer Research UK, the British Heart Foundation, the Alzheimer's Society, and Parkinson's UK. They said, please boycott giving any money to them until they end support for animal testing.
Medical animal testing is possibly one of the most easily justified types of animal testing.
Yeah. And there's been such an improvement of it recently. And in Britain, the laws surrounding it are more stringent than anywhere else in Europe, as far as, so I've heard. I haven't compared the laws. But it's not something that you want to say, I want animals to be tested on all the time. I think it's brilliant. In fact, I do it as a hobby. it's not great. Nobody's going to say that.
I mean, if something could come out that was better than animal testing, you know, if there was like, if data simulation could get to the point where it could realistically simulate what would happen, great. But no, at the moment it can't. Mm. And we have to test on animals. It's like one of these things that we'd rather not do, but we have to.
Yeah, and you know, they constructed a heart from stem cells, and the heart started beating. Now, if they can construct things that they can then test their theories on and the processes on, then that would be fantastic. But the way to be able to find out if we can do that is to test on animals. So you're quite right, it would be great to have an alternative, but we're not going to get an alternative if you stop animal testing altogether. It's insane. There are so many people who would be dead if it wasn't for animal testing, myself included. Insulin wouldn't be about. But I went to Animal Aid's website just to see what decent arguments they had. And on their About Us page, bless them, it's got pictures in four places depicting animals. Right. There's a mission statement with adorable lambs. There's an email reminder button with a cute puppy sat at a laptop.
There's
even an advert from Asda. They've got in on befuddling the mentally and emotionally bewildered, as their link button has the green Asda name and three ickle kittens. Now, the fourth picture of animals is more honest. The button says, want to find out more about our campaigns? Order a free information pack. And the picture shows three dull-eyed sheep staring into the lens.
Yes, I can see now.
Have you got the page?
Yeah, I've just looked it up now.
Continuing the animal testing story, if I may, there was a wonderful story in one of the less read papers, the Sunday Express. Front page. Test drugs on pets, says EU. Experiments on cats, dogs and horses could soar in the UK. So, according to the Sunday Express, the EU now wants to test drugs on pets. And as they pointed out here on Tabloid Watch, it makes it sound as if the EU is going to be snatching up kittens from crying children and hauling them off to the laboratory. So
it's like the word "your" was in there, but nobody said it. Your pets.
Yeah. So here we go. So according to Ted Jory of the Daily Express, thousands of pets in Britain could end up being used in lab tests if European plans to weaken our tough animal welfare laws succeed. The Brussels directive could trigger a dramatic rise in the number of cats, dogs and horses used in laboratory experiments. The plan would remove the special protection domestic animals currently have under the UK law. So, and at the end of it, he puts, under the EU directive, member states can retain their own laws, providing they were in place by last November. So in other words, straight in his own article, he refutes the headline by saying, this won't happen if we've got our own laws.
Which but not we only did before November anyway.
But not only that, but if you actually read the directive, it doesn't mention pets at all.
Of course it doesn't. That is one of these other over-extrapolations that the Daily Express and its ilk love to promote.
Basically, they're saying, since the background of stray feral animals' domestic species is not known, and since capture and placement into establishments increases distress, they should not, as a general rule, be used in procedures. So it only actually mentions stray animals, you know, stray dogs and cats, saying don't use them because you don't know what's happened to them, so it could throw off any scientific research you're doing on them, which I thought was kind of obvious, and that's why they've put it in there. And it even says, it says that there could be an exemption for stray animals, and that is if you're investigating something to do with stray animals, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So someone's gone and, you know, thought this out quite well. But because of idiot headlines like this, where people don't do any research and or are dishonest, it's forced the European Commission representative in the UK to actually reply via letter, saying, your front page in the EU plans to use pets in scientific experiments is nonsense. The pets in Britain are safe from scientific experiments. EU rules state that only animals specifically bred for research can be used. So there you go. So completely refutes it. So how? But why don't you know? Maybe I ask this question all the time. How can you make a front page article? You know, without doing any research whatsoever, or just making stuff up? Why aren't people going to jail for this kind of crap?
Because it sells papers and nobody... Well, the people don't get outraged about it enough is the problem. I mean, it is just complete lies, and I don't know why people don't get annoyed by it more.
But journalists don't just surrender their intelligence when they take up the job in this country. They surrender any organs of shame that they might have as well, which they shouldn't, because my shame organs are some of the most fun parts of my body.
And the press release from the European Commission, just to add to what you guys said, it said, this commission believes strongly in the need to find alternative methods to animal testing. Whereas this is not possible, the number of animals used must be reduced. But they're basically saying, we need to find an alternative. We know it's not perfect, but until we do, this is our only option. So there you go.
I think that article probably brings up what Ben Goldacre gets annoyed at when they have, I can't remember what exactly he calls it, but it's like the pitfall in one of the last paragraphs far down the page where the reader isn't expected to read, because I think psychological studies prove that people usually only read a certain part of an article, don't read all of it, before skipping on to the next one. And normally they'll have this pitfall late on in the article, like that, as it was, and you know, same thing basically. It's just one of these pitfalls in the last paragraph.
Great. Well, we've gone a minute over time, and there was me worried that we wouldn't have enough to talk about after 10 minutes. But okay. Well, if unless any of you got anything to squeeze in, I'll wrap up.
Oh, okay. Go see Green Lantern. It's brilliant.
Well, it was my dad's day treat on Saturday, and even though my voice had gone crazy deep, I sounded like Sinestro. So I had to shave my beard off, so I kept the Sinestro moustache, went looking like a fat boysy or a bit of a pedo rather than actually Sinestro. While we were in there, I was making green constructs of my own with my cold.
Lovely.
Nice.
As if inspired by it. But it's a stupid film, and it's nonsense, but it's lots of fun.
Excellent.
Don't believe all the crap.
I've just got one other thing to say, possibly. You can hopefully look out soon for a sceptical support forum for people with illnesses, generally chronic or mental illnesses. I've been in contact with someone else who's got JREF support, and we're hopefully going to be launching a sceptical support forum and blog very soon, so watch out for that.
Great. Well, when that's launched, you can come on and you know, pimp the URL and everything.
Excellent, thank you.
No problem.
Fantastic.
And, that's great. I was going to recommend a film, but I don't think I will now, because it's quite old, and I can't even remember the bloody title of it now. What's Matt Damon been in?
Something.
Yeah. Shaving Ryan's Privates? He was Private Ryan, wasn't he?
No,
never heard it called that before.
No, right. you haven't seen the porn version of it. That's your problem.
Oh God, no!
You need to Google it.
I'd rather not.
No, don't. I'm drawing a blank. Is it a Bourne film?
No, it's Oh, this is going to annoy me, because it was in my head and I completely forgot. You're talking of the Green Lantern. It really annoyed me. So, and whenever someone mentions the Green Lantern now, I'm just always thinking of, the Big Bang Theory and... Yeah, I'm not into the comic book thing, so I just don't get it at all. So, oh, sorry. You know, sorry if not everyone's like you, you know, into their portal too, while Green Lantern's on in the other room.
Hey.
Yeah.
The Adjustment Bureau is the name of the film.
Right. Yes. Oh, that looks great.
That's not old.
Well, it's old as in it's not in the cinema anymore. It's I watched it, and it's worth a watch. You know, it's kind of like other films where you watch them once and you're thinking that's good, but nah, I don't think I'll watch it again. It's not. Yeah.
So you had the mild disappointment of wishing that you had only spent the money on renting it, and then you would have felt like you enjoyed it more, but because you spent all the money going out to see it in the cinema, you think, yeah.
Oh, no, I didn't watch it in the cinema. And we'll leave it at that.
Anyway, watching it in the cinema is better, because then you only have to pay for it once anyway.
Yeah, this is true. Unless you got some twat next to you eating popcorn.
And you kind of have to go back and watch it again.
Yeah, but then I just tell the bitch to go get back in the car and I'll see her after.
But now they've brought out 3D films, so all of the morons and the mentals will go and see it in 3D, so they can sit there rocking backwards and forwards like Pavlovian dummies.
Yeah.
Instead of actually watching the film with clarity like it was meant to be watched.
Yes, of course. Who doesn't love things popping out at you?
Well, I'm glad it wasn't me this week.
Now, Reese, don't say anything porny. Come on.
Yeah, I can't.
We'll go to prison.
Yeah. Okay, right, I'm going to wrap it up, and we'll catch you next week, so it's goodbye from me.
Can't apologise enough from me.
Yep, I'm sorry everyone, and I will speak to you again soon.